All right, I'll never forget it. It was eighth grade. We were celebrating J.V. Schwann's birthday party as he was turning 13. It was 10 teenage boys in a house, all night sleepover. We were pumped. This was the plan. Watch a horror movie, escape the house at 2 a.m., get back by 6 a.m. so mom and dad don't know. You with me? Teenagers, don't listen to this. Everybody else, you're in. All right, so we decided to watch Friday the 13th. Now, for some of you, you have no idea, right, who Freddy Krueger is. Not who Jason is. Jason, the goalie mask. If you ever, like, watched it with a horror movie, it's amazing how it is in that you, if you're the victim, you're always running from the villain. The villain is always walking, but always catching up. I don't know how that all works. But we end up watching Friday the 13th. We then decide to leave the house, and we make our way out. And we decided to go to this house that was way back in the woods. And the rumor was, if you knock on this guy's door, if you're in his yard, you will be shot. That was the rumor. 10 teenage boys like, game on. Let's go see what happens, right? So we go, honestly, we walk into this guy's driveway. The no trespassing signs are everywhere. And we're like, come on, like, let's go. Each one of us individually would have ran like crazy. But together, there was a sense of like, all right, let's try to do this thing. So in the olden days, we call it ding dong ditch. So that's what we did. Pound on this guy's door, ring the doorbell, and just take off. Let me tell you something. I never in a million years would have done that alone. But with somebody, I'm in. That's what happens, right? That's what happens in the midst of relationships. I mean, a couple years ago, my wife was like, hey, do you want to run a marathon? It's like, no, I don't want to run a marathon. Running is only punishment. Like, what are you talking about? I played basketball like through college. I was like, running means punishment. And then she said this. Do you want to run a marathon with me? I'm in. So we ran a marathon together like 6 years ago, right? My wife says to me, hey, you want to jump out of an airplane? No, I don't want to jump out of an airplane. Like, I want to live. I want to see my kids, you know, like, grow up and, you know, do something with their lives, you know? And then she's like, well, you want to jump out of an airplane with me? I'm in, right? Like, there's something about being together. My brother lives out in Africa. He runs orphanages out there. And, we were in the Maasai Mara, which is like safari land. So you got lions and cheetahs and elephants and giraffes. You got like every, like, you know, man-eating creature out in the Maasai Mara. Like, the reality is, if my brother would be like, dude, you want to like go through the Maasai Mara tonight? I'd be like, yeah, with you, sure. Right, because as long as I beat my brother, I'm okay, right? Like, lion beat eats him, I'll be all right. So there's something about the sense of doing something together. When it's about being together, I'm in. When it's about doing something alone, not so much. Rebecca Sachs, she says this. She's an associate professor, wrote an article about neuroscience at MIT. She says this about this. She talks about, although humans exhibit strong preferences for equity and moral prohibitions against harm in many contexts, people's priorities change when there is an us and a them. A group of people will often engage in actions that are contrary to the private moral standards of each individual in that group, sweeping otherwise decent individuals into mobs that commit looting, vandalism, and even physical brutality. Right, and we've seen that. She understands the brain. We're kind of wired that way. We get ourselves around a group of people and we begin to do things that we never would do alone. And my hope this morning is this. That I know that quote was about a mob of mentality of doing vandalism, but what would happen if this church had a mob mentality of loving Jesus and of pursuing Jesus with all they have? What would happen to the triad, if a group of people had a mob mentality and a heart abandoned after God. This area would change. But not only would this area change, others around it, the ripple effect, would continue on and on and on. And I'll tell you what, your city, this triad, is longing to see a church with a heart abandoned fully to Jesus Christ. They are longing to see a church that is different. They're longing to see a church that's willing to trust God more than ever before, willing to love extraordinarily, willing to share their faith in their everyday. What if we had a mob mentality towards a heart abandoned for God? Turn in your Bibles to 1 Samuel chapter 14. Anytime we open up the Word, we want to make sure we get it in the context that we're understanding. So let me give you a little bit of the context as we enter into 1 Samuel chapter 14. The context is this. Saul is king. He's the king of Israel. He's the first king. This is early on in his reign. So he became king about when he was about 30 years old. Reigned for 42 years. And once again, this is early on in his reign. Saul and the nation of Israel is in a battle against the Philistines. Saul has 3,000 soldiers with him. 2,000 are with King Saul. 1,000 are with his son Jonathan. All right, so that's the context of what happens. Jonathan takes 1,000 soldiers, and you can see this in 1 Samuel 13. Jonathan takes 1,000 soldiers with him, and they destroy a garrison, like a part of the Philistine army. As they do that, what happens is the Philistines get angry. And so what they do is they bring in the masses. So all of a sudden, out of this victory, the Philistines bring in 30,000 chariots. Can you imagine that? 6,000 charioteers. Like all of this like full army of people. And so what does the nation of Israel do? They hide. They hide in caves. The soldiers that had gathered together disperse. Saul is now left with about 600 men, soldiers that are with him. And Jonathan is left. Because this is what we know. It's fear, right? Fear can lead us to make some bad decisions. Fear led Saul to make some really bad decisions. And fear can lead us to make some really bad decisions, right? The fear of acceptance. When we want to be accepted, we try to fit in and we regret some of the things that we do. We fear vulnerability. Have you ever been in a growth group or small group? And like there's something going on in your life where you're afraid to be vulnerable. So what happens? You don't say anything, right? Because you're afraid of it. And so you keep it inside and you live alone. Some of you are there. Some of you, that's where you're at this morning. There's a fear of the unknown in the future. There's these fears and they begin to shake and we begin to make bad decisions in the midst of this. But once again, this is where the church is so significant. What if we had a mob mentality of a heart abandoned for God? Fear begins to dissipate. In fact, 1 John chapter 4, 16 makes it clear to us that love drives out fear. 1 John chapter 4, verse 16 says, "So we have come to know and to believe the love that God has for us. God is love, and whoever abides in love abides in God, and God abides in him. And by this is love perfected with us, so that we may have confidence for the day of judgment, because he is so also are we in this world. And there is no fear in love, but perfect love casts out fear." What if the church loved one another in such a way? We pursued God with a heart of band, this mob mentality. I think we'd see the triad transformed. Here's three ways that we can pursue God together. All right, you with me? We got the context. Now let's get into the text. Three ways that we can pursue God together. Number one, let's dig deeper and invest in your relationship with God. People, this is where it starts. It starts with you getting on your knees in the morning. It starts with you, like, just continuing to pursue God. It starts with you investing in your relationship with God. Let's read 1 Samuel chapter 13, verse 22. It says this. So on the day of the battle, there was neither sword nor spear found in the hand of any of the people with Saul and Jonathan, but Saul and Jonathan, his son, had them. And the garrison of the Philistines went out to the pass of Michmash. So think about this. I read that for this. Verse 22, no one had a sword except who? Saul and Jonathan. Remember that. Remember that as we look at this. All right, so 1 Samuel chapter 14, let's read it. So one day, Jonathan, the son of Saul, said to the young man who carried his armor, come, let us go over to the Philistine garrison on the other side. But he did not tell his father. So Saul was staying in the outskirts of Gibeah in the pomegranate cave at Migron, and the people who were with him were about 600 men, including Ahijah, the son of Ahitub, Ichabod's brother, son of Phinehas, son of Eli, the priest of the Lord in Shiloh, wearing an ephod. And the people did not know that Jonathan had gone, right? So everybody's in these caves and these crags and everybody's in these cracks. Everybody's kind of escaped. But Jonathan now with his armor bearer has left. Verse 4. So within the passes by which Jonathan sought to go over to the Philistine garrison, there was a rocky crag on the one side and a rocky crag on the other side. And the name of the one was Bozez, and the name of the other, Senna. And the one crag rose on the north in front of Michmash, and the other on the south in front of Gibeah. So I just try to picture in your minds what's happening. Everybody's fearful. Everybody's afraid, right? Saul, King Saul is on one side. Jonathan is just with his armor bearer saying, hey, let's go. Like, let's try to, like, figure out what's happening with the Philistines. So just picture in your minds these rocky crags, these cliffs on either side as Jonathan and the armor bearer begin to kind of see where the Philistines are. And I want you in your mind as you think about what it is to kind of be between two rocky places, it's a very dangerous place to be. Are you with me? It's like when we're between a rock and a hard place. It's those moments in life where we're beginning to like process through, what does this really look like? What is God doing? Look at verse 6. And Jonathan said to the young man who carried his armor, come, let us go over to the garrison of these uncircumcised. It may be that the Lord will work for us, for nothing can hinder the Lord from saving by many or by few. Right there, Jonathan digs deep. Right there, Jonathan makes this decision. Our God can do anything. Whether it's by many or by few, our God saves. And in this moment, between a rock and a hard place, right, as Jonathan is in this very, this momental moment, this moment of decision, he's going, listen, we're going to trust God. We're going to trust God. We're going to invest in our relationship with God and see what happens. And I don't know about you, but it's in those cliff moments of life that we've got to dig deep. I know that we always pray not to suffer. Reality is when we suffer, we dig deep. We invest in our relationship with God. And I'll tell you what, I want to be hanging out with people like that. I want to be hanging out with your pastor. I want to be hanging out with your elders. I want to be hanging out with y'all. Because you guys are making a step. I mean, this Seek First generosity initiative, it's crazy what you guys are trying to do. Trying to raise $250,000. Honestly, with what, I think you said 225 people or something like that. That's insane. And yet you guys are saying, let's go. The gospel's greater. Jesus is greater. Let's dig deep. Let's invest in. Let's invest in our relationship with God. There's no way that you can be as generous as you all are being without digging deep and investing in your relationship with God. You know what I'm saying? That's where generosity overflows, is in your relationship with God. Because I don't know about you, but there's fear as we give. There's fear as we let go of the finances that we have. And yet God is going, come on, come on. Let's dig a little bit deeper. Let's invest a little bit more in our relationship. Let's see what God can do, because God can do more. And I tell you what, I want to be around people like that. I want to be around people who are trusting God and what he has done. Do not, like, never forget the 4 years, man. God has been so faithful, and he'll continue to be faithful. Trusting together in what he says. Never forget the promises. Trusting together in what God is doing. Invest in your relationship with God. What if there was this mob mentality, this church that gathered together that said, let's pursue Jesus with everything. Let's dig deep. Here's the second. Let's stretch wider and invite someone to go with you. If you want to have a mob mentality, if you want to pursue the Lord, what if you invite someone along the journey with you? Are you willing to do that? So what happens in 1 Samuel chapter 14, verse 7. So Jonathan, verse 7, here we go. And his armor bearer said to him, do all that is in your heart. Do as you wish. Behold, I am with you heart and soul. Let's keep going, verse 8. So then Jonathan said, behold, we will cross over to the men and we will show ourselves to them. If they say to us, wait until we come to you, then we will stand still in our place and we will not go up to them. But if they say, come up to us, then we will go up, for the Lord has given them into our hands, and this shall be the sign to us. So both of them showed themselves to the garrison of the Philistines. And the Philistines said, look, Hebrews are coming out of the holes where they have hidden themselves. Right? They're like making fun of them. And the men of the garrison hailed Jonathan and his armor bearer and said, come up to us, and we will show you a thing. And Jonathan said to his armor bearer, come up after me, for the Lord has given them into the hand of Israel. Hey, armor bearer, without a sword. Hey, I know there's 20 to 40 Philistines up there who have all swords. And I know there's only two of us. But hey, let's climb up this little cliff. Let's peek over. Let's show ourselves and let's see what God can do. In our minds, what are we thinking? When we read the story, we're like, this is awesome. Yeah, I mean, totally, armor bearer, go, right? You know what I mean? Like, Jonathan and armor bearer, go. Like, you win. We know, we read the story. We know God will come through. You know, are you with me? Live the story. Start living the story. When you don't know what comes in the future, are you willing to say what the armor bearer said? Hey, Jonathan, I'm with you, heart and soul. Are you willing to come up to your brother who's struggling in their marriage and say, I'm with you, heart and soul? Are you willing to come up to your sister and say, hey, I know you're struggling through a lot of things. I'm with you, heart and soul. Teenagers, are you willing to go to your friends in the midst of all the media chaos, the social media chaos, and say, hey, I'm with you heart and soul? Because I tell you what, we're longing for that, aren't we? I mean, aren't we longing for people that, dude, I'm with you heart and soul. I'm in this. I'm in this. A couple weeks ago, I was driving home from the office, and it was about 5:30. It was a beautiful sunny day. I was heading back. My daughter plays soccer, so I was heading back. I was coaching her. And I'm on a four-lane highway, meaning two lanes are driving south, two lanes going north. Are you with me? And I'm on the two south lanes driving home. And I'll tell you what, I have a huge pet peeve when I drive. If you're in the left-hand lane, you better be moving. Like, don't slow down in the left-hand lane. That's why there's the right lane. You want to go slow? Head on over to the right. That's the lane for you. You know what I'm saying? Are you guys with me on this? I'm in the left-hand lane. trying to get home to my practice. Like, a tough day. It was a tough day that day. I was just driving through. And sure enough, like, this person that's not right directly ahead of me, but another car ahead of me. So there's one between us. Sure enough, like, she's putting on her brakes in the left-hand lane. She comes to a light, and she's, like, turning on her blinker and then going straight. And you're like, stop being so clueless. Like, know where you're going. Follow the GPS and get it done. Now, you have to have some grace with me. Come on now, have a little grace with me. I mean, it's after work. It's stressful. I got to get home. So sure enough, we approach this intersection. She's in the left-hand lane, and she stops in the intersection. So the car behind her, I'm behind this other person. I then look in my rearview mirror, and I'm seeing this person behind me is not able to stop. So I go, you know what? I'm going to go in the left-hand turn lane, right? Because we're at an intersection, so now we have a left-hand turn lane. I'm going to move over to the left-hand turn lane. So I begin to shift over to the left-hand turn lane to avoid the accident. Right at that time, a car comes over into the left-hand turn lane. Poosh, crash. I'm like, oh, my word. Like, this is not what I needed today. You know what I'm saying? Like, it was like, there's never a good time for an accident. But this is not the day for an accident. And then it's the moment. I mean, you guys know the moment. It's the moment when after the accident happens and you begin to think, what kind of car did I hit? Are you with me? Like, if you ever, like, seen an accident on the side and you're like, oh, that stinks. Like, he hit a Jaguar. You know what I mean? Like, oh, Tesla, too bad. Like, that stinks, right? So now I'm in that place. And I'm like, what kind of car did I just hit? And I'm going, I hope it's a Ford Focus. I hope it's a Ford Focus. I'll settle for a Toyota Camry. You know what I mean? Like, give me a Toyota Camry. At this point, I'm like, give me a BMW. Give me a BMW. I hit the car that goes 185. I hit a Maserati. A Maserati, seriously? I hit a Maserati. So thankfully, no one was hurt, right? It's just a lot of side damage. We pull off, cop comes. My phone honestly was broken because I dumped it in water. Just not a good day, you know what I'm saying? So I can't even call my wife. So I actually asked the person that I hit, hey, can I borrow your phone? So I'm calling my wife, and this was, once again, this was like kind of after everything kind of settled a little bit. The cops were kind of on their way. And I'm sitting in my car, and I'm just thinking about all the things that are going on in my life. And I'm thinking about my daughter's heading to college, so I'm like, college bills to pay. I have two other kids that just cost a lot of money. So I'm like, these bills are just kind of running through my head. And I call my wife up, and I'm a little bit of a aggressive driver, you could say. So like, I was kind of like, how is Michelle gonna respond to this? Is it like, am I gonna get yelled at? And honestly, in that moment, like, tears were kind of coming down my eyes. I mean, I know it's a weak man, but it's true. Like, I was just kind of weeping. I was just like, I can't believe this all happened. And I call up Michelle, and I said, I just hit somebody, and it was my fault. And she said this to me. She said, I just want you to come home. I just want to hug you. I just want to give you a hug. I mean, that's what we're longing for, right? I'm with you heart and soul. Yeah, you just got in an accident, but I'm with you. I'm in this life with you. We're longing for that in our marriage. We're longing for that in our with our friends. We're longing for that in our families. We're longing for that, like, in our church. I mean, what if this church said this is a heart and soul church? What if there's this mob mentality of a heart abandoned after God? The triad would be transformed. Heart and soul, I'm with you. Heart and soul, let's do it. What would happen if we began to live our lives like that. Because let me tell you this. If you don't really listen honestly to anything else in the message, listen to this. Because our God is a heart and soul God. Because when we messed up, when we were in our sin, the Bible says that when we were God's enemies, He loved us anyway. And if you doubt God's love, hear this. He loved us so much that He sent His one and only Son, Jesus Christ, to walk this earth, to live a life, to weep with people, to laugh with people, to take people on adventure, to then die on a cross for you, for me, so that when we put our faith in Him and what He has done for us on the cross, by His blood being shed, we are forgiven of our sin when we confess. And we know it is true. We know Jesus is the way and the one because He was raised from the grave 3 days later. That's how. He's a heart and soul God. And let me tell you something. No matter where you are, teenagers, listen up, man. No matter where you've been, no matter where you will go. Moms, dads, listen to this. No matter what you've done, no matter where you go, when you put your faith in Jesus Christ, He will never leave you nor forsake you. He will be with you always. In the midst of your addiction, in the midst of your sin, in the midst of your struggle, He is with you. And what if the church reflected our awesome God? I believe it for you guys. I do. I believe it. I see it. I see it. Three ways we can pursue God together. Dig deeper. Invest in your relationship with God. Stretch wider. Invite someone in, right? And then let's see what God does and go farther in sending people out. Let's pick it up. 1 Samuel chapter 14, starting at verse 13. Word of God says this. So then Jonathan climbed up on his hands and feet and his armor bearer after him, and they fell before Jonathan. And his armor bearer killed them after him. And that first strike which Jonathan and his armor bearer made killed about 20 men within as it were half a furrow's length in an acre of land. And there was a panic in the camp, in the field, and among all the people, and the garrison, and even the raiders trembled, and the earth quaked, and it became a very great panic. Right now, God begins to enter in with the earth quaking, and Philistines are freaking out. We're going to just skip down to verse 22, because what I want you to see is how just the power of God continues to go forth when people begin to serve Him. Verse 22 of 1 Samuel chapter 14 says, likewise, when all the men of Israel who had hidden themselves in the hill country of Ephraim heard that the Philistines were fleeing, they too followed hard after them in the battle. So the Lord saved Israel that day, and the battle passed beyond Beth Avon. Because Jonathan and his armor bearer were willing to enter into this battle, all of a sudden the nation of Israel began to come out of the caves, and all of a sudden the nation of Israel wins the battle because God saves them. Don't ever think that your love, church, your love for one another, your love for God, your pursuit of Him does not have a ripple effect throughout, does not impact the lives of people throughout the triad. What would happen if a church came together and had this mob mentality of a heart abandoned after God? I truly think there'll be this ripple effect that goes out from this church that will impact so many lives and transform the lives. So many people, right, have no idea who Jesus Christ is. They will come to know and put their faith in Him as we have this faith and to see what God has for us. And it all started with one man's faith, investing in his relationship with God, which led him to say, hey, come along with me. And that person saying, I'm with you heart and soul. And God, in the midst of all of it, began to enter in, continued to enter in, and Israel wins the victory. So what if we gained this mob mentality of a heart abandoned after God? I truly think we will see something so powerful in this area and beyond. I wanted to end with a video clip. It's a movie clip from the movie Lord of the Rings. It's one of my favorites. And this is at the end of the first movie, I believe. What you'll see, for those of you no idea what Lord of the Rings is, you'll see Frodo Baggins, who's the main character in a boat, and his role is to take this ring that he has been given and destroy this ring. And what he realized in the first movie is that it's too dangerous to have anyone go with him. So what Frodo decides to do is Frodo decides to say, you know what, I'm gonna do this thing alone. So you'll see Frodo in this boat alone, and then you'll see this friend, Sam, come onto the scene. I don't wanna give any more than that. Here's the video.
I wish the ring had never come to me. I wish none of this had happened.
So do all who live to see such times, but that is not for them to decide. All you have to decide is what to do with the time that is given to you.
Mr. Frodo, a promise. Don't you leave him, Samwise Gamgee. And I don't mean to.
Oh, Sam.
Some of you this morning, you're like Frodo. And you're in this boat and you're all alone. And you're going, man, I'm just longing for someone to come alongside. Church, It's your call to step in. It's your call to be like Sam and enter into those waters and go after him. Some of you need to be Sam. You need to jump in. You have a friend who's alone and you need to jump in that water and you need to go after him. Because let me tell you something. In John chapter 15, verse 13, it says, greater love has no one than this, that someone lay down his life for his friends. You are my friends. Jesus Christ, when you were alone on that boat, he pursued you. He went after you. And when you were sinking like Sam Gamgee, when you were sinking in that water and you were drowning, he reached his hand down and he picked you up and he saved you. What would happen to the triad if there was a mob mentality of a heart abandoned after Jesus Christ? Let's do it, church. Let's see what the next 25 years has for you. And look back and see lives transformed for the gospel.